Same here.
I'm with Mr. Bob Beeson. My name is James Quisado. We're in Valmont, British Columbia. It is the 13th of July, the year 2000. And what is the thing you remember most about living in Valmont?
Oh, over the years there's been so many things I don't know. My biggest surprise was when I arrived.
What was that?
Well, the train was held up at a snow slide this side of Jasper for 8 hours. I arrived here about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
I got off the train. All I could see was the station with the word Valmont on it. But I couldn't see anything else. I thought, where did I come to? And I looked around and I saw a building after the train pulled out.
Right.
I saw a building onto one side. I think the word was Valmont Hotel on it. It was a little old building there.
Right.
And my brother's with me. Pretty soon somebody came running down the track, hollering my name. They expected me, but not so late.
Right, yeah.
And, so the next morning, I began to investigate. I came here to set up sawmills for them.
All right.
Yeah. And,
and what year was that?
And that was 1948. 1948.
April the 10th. So there was a lot of snow even in April.
Well, oh yeah. The next day was a lot of snow.
Wow.
And I would say the population, I think there was 5 families.
Right.
And maybe 20 bachelors.
So maybe around 50 people.
But making ties, taking out poles.
Right.
It was all concentrated village right around the station. It was a nice looking station, half as big as it is now, the museum. But no agent. It was just a store place for the section man's stuff.
Oh, okay.
There was no agent then. But the next day, we talked this over. Us to set a sawmill for a man named William Oleksiv. He's gone. He's left quite a name in the valley.
William
Oleksiv. O-L-E-X-I-U-K. His wife is still living in the senior's home here. Yeah, not very well. His daughter, Eileen, is the Canadian Embassy in Athens, Greece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I went to, stayed with her last summer for a couple of weeks, or a week.
Now,
well, anyhow,
you
we
said,
went...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We went to see about setting this sawmill up, and I met him in it. At a northern town in Alberta, Spurfield,
right.
Which was the headquarters of the Canyon Creek Sawmills at the time. That was where Canyon Creek Sawmills originated.
Right.
And I was a night sawyer in the mill at the time. And he asked me, can you run small sawmills? And I said, that's all I ever worked in my day, you know.
Right.
Well, he says, if. So the wife and I have save some money. If we were to buy a little mill, would you set it up for us? And I says, where? Well, in BC, I know a place I could use one.
Right.
What would you buy? And so we're having supper way up in the north tonight.
Yeah.
He kept writing down. I says, oh, I'd buy a little Coos mill, just a T120 type Chrysler motor.
Right.
And a little Briggs and Stratton trim, and that's all you need.
Right.
How long it take you to set it? Oh, I says, I have set them up in 2 days. What? I says, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's possible. So he sends me a letter when I'm on the Athabasca. I buy just like you say, he's Ukrainian, da-da-da-da.
Right.
Will you come and set it?
Yeah.
Boom. Yep.
No kidding.
That's how I arrived in Valmont.
Right. Really?
And you didn't stop at the salmon spawning grounds or George Hicks Park or any of that.
No.
That's right where you cross the stream coming into town.
Okay.
That's Swift Creek.
Right.
Well, that's George Hicks Park. Well, there was no road there, nothing there, no bridge when I came.
Right.
And that was the timber. The timber sluice was like that, and George Hicks owned it.
Well, that big,
I think. Yeah. And the trees were felled and put in the creek by one horse on multiple cables and pulleys to get them in.
Yeah.
And they floated them down where I had the middle set. And we pulled them out of the water in a jack ladder up on the mill.
Right.
And saw it all summer.
Wow.
10 hours a shift. wages for a worker was 85 cents an hour then.
Right.
And we camped under a little tent under a big tree to start with until that bunkhouse was built.
Oh, so after you set up, you stayed on the whole bit? And
I stayed there for about a year or two.
Right.
And the big tree where we camped under, they hired a cook one time. And the cook came down there, and the cook's name was Dave Henry.
Right.
Well, Dave Henry, as soon as he found out my name was Bob Beeson.
Right.
You wouldn't be related to somebody by the name of Ed Beeson. I says, that's my father. He went through this valley in 1909.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
So.
The Canoe Valley?
Yeah. Well, he came up by canoe and pack horse up here in the early years. Well, this Dave Henry was 1 year younger than my father, and he started blowing how great a man this father of mine was when he was a young fella. He was a physical, well-built giant.
Right, yeah.
And he says, you see this big tree we're sitting under tonight by the cookhouse?
Right.
He says, your father and I spent nights sleeping under this tree. This is where we bought our boats. When we brought them from from Golden, we built the boats. Come
right.
Up the canoe, we packed the boats over a trail.
Right.
And the trail went over to there, and that's it. This is the height of land.
Right.
We put the boats in the McLennan River.
Right.
It was called differently then. And went to the Fraser.
Right.
And we had the other route. This was the dividing point of the men that wanted to go from the Columbia into the Fraser system.
Oh, right.
My father didn't go into the Fraser system.
Right.
But he helped these guys move boats. Now, these boats were moved right past to my land here. And the old trail is not much shown of it.
Right.
It was the only trail used when I came here.
Right.
And it's called the Golden T. John Trail.
Okay.
And I never knew why it was called the Golden T. John Trail till I took this land. And then I got an old map. The trail was here
right.
Before the railroad was here. Therefore, when the railroad come, they had to put a public crossing in.
Right.
And the public crossing is out beyond my big house.
Oh, no kidding.
Then, all this has been moved and changed.
Right.
The crossing has gone up on the far side of my quarter.
Right.
And they wiped out the public crossing. And I had to pay on it for a few years for what they call private pedestrian crossing. So my children could go across to the bus and catch the bus.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, that's a little bit of the old history. But setting this sawmill, this Bill Alexis, we didn't have, none of us had much money.
Right.
He had to borrow a cook stove and dishes and a few things. And these cook stove and dishes were up on beyond Cedar Side. That's where we are now,
right.
On the hill. So, there was four of us got together. We're going to go up with two horses and get these dishes and stove. And they said, there's going to be deep snow up there.
Right.
April's wet heavy. So away we went with a truck first and then got the horses and hooked on a stone boat and started up the mountain.
Right.
Well, we didn't go very far. The horses were lunging through 4 foot of wet snow,
wow.
Just jumping, you know,
right.
Pulling this stone boat. And we got it awful close to the old cookhouse.
Right.
And then we did, by hand, we pulled this stone boat up to the cookhouse
right.
And shoveled a hole under the eave
right.
So we could get down to the doorway.
Oh, I see.
The
okay, yeah.
So the,
wow.
And four of us, we got the cook stove out, loaded it on this stone boat.
Right.
And packed the dishes such as we were, went down. And I remember, I'm no horseman, no cowboy.
Right.
But I fell off one of the horses hanging on the hames. And I slid into wet snow to my armpits.
And took really?
Two had to pull me out of this wet snow and get me back on the horse.
Okay. Jeez.
And we sat this sawmill on George Hicks Park, which is George Hicks Park today, George
okay.
Hicks' place.
Right.
He was a realist, made some history in the village.
Do you know the name of the mill that they set up?
The set for Bill Alexis. We just called it Bill Alexis sawmill.
You did, okay.
Yeah, that day. Later,
right.
Bill Alexis, myself, and the owner of Canyon Creek Sawmills from the north.
Right.
Bob Sterrett. He's got this big sanctuary named after the Bob Sterrett Bird Sanctuary, Wildlife Sanctuary, right all this out here.
Right.
Those neighbors.
Oh, okay.
This one. He bought a sawmill and started up, which is the big Spokane today.
Right.
And he brought the name with him, Canyon Creek Sawmills.
Canyon Creek Sawmills.
And it was Canyon Creek Sawmills for years until Spokane Forest Products bought it out.
Now he owned it, and who else? You?
And no, finally Bill Alexic went in as a partner. I was asked to go in, I didn't go in.
Right.
I operated it with a planer mill, that's what I got, and little mills on the side.
So that fellow's name was?
Bob Sterrett.
Bob Sterrett.
And Bob Sterrett originally was Sterrett Airlines. He started from a transportation fella in the Hudson in the Northern Ontario.
Right.
And he had Sterrett Airlines, which is the largest commercial airline at the time in Canada, and it was taken over Pacific Western, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I got some of the histories in there, I can show you.
Okay.
Well, anyhow, setting this sawmill, this Bill Alexic, he was bragging me up.
Right.
About what a great sawyer I was.
Right.
And he says he can set this sawmill in 2 days. And there's a lot of bar room talk in those days.
I didn't
go there. They got bets going. There's no man can set a sawmill up in 2 days.
Right.
Had lots of good help. And we went at it, and I couldn't figure why Bill, everything just went nearly wild trying to get me all the help he could.
Right.
And the second day, we started the unit up. The man packed a log and put it on the carriage, and I saw the board.
Right.
Well, he went running through the bush, stole the road dead.
Right.
Into town, the hotel man, Alec Kushner,
yeah.
Got his old truck, and they loaded it all up with a keg of beer or two.
Right.
And no, it wasn't kegs, it was all bottled beer in those days.
Right.
And down they come, they're all Ukrainians.
Right.
And I had to keep running this mill every hour during the night while there were big feast and drink and everything.
No kidding.
Bill won this big bet, but the mill could run in 2 days.
Right, there you go.
In a sort of a way, it just sort of bored.
Yeah, but still, yeah.
They won his bet.
Yeah.
And Bill did a lot of things here. He has one wing of the McBride Hospital is named after him now. It's the extended care unit.
Oh, okay.
He died of cancer there himself.
Oh.
Him and I were on the hospital board off and on for 20 years, I guess.
Right, on McBride Hospital Board.
Yeah, and we were on village council together, and we worked together quite a little bit in the village when it was being built into a village.
Now, when you first were here, how long did it take before the town of Belmont started to build up like it then?
It started to grow the year after I came here. All it needed was a little bit of organizing.
Right.
Myself, I've been in, always have been sort of an organizer of community affairs, like a community hall and stuff. So I mentioned this, and that summer, I got on the train and went to Victoria and found out through the government, what do I do to start a community hall?
Right.
What are the regulations, da, da, da.
Right.
And I got off the train coming back from Victoria, and there was half the population to meet me. We went to the only little one-room schoolhouse.
Right.
Had a meeting, and we started to draw plans.
Right.
In a matter of 48 hours, we were pouring cement foundations to put this sawmill, community hall up.
Right.
All donations. Everything was donation material. Everything was just pouring in.
Right, from the town of
from the town and
right.
From businessmen that bought lumber and suppliers of sawmill equipment. Everybody just jumped in, and in no time, we had a community hall, which was the nucleus of raising money for anything we needed in the village.
Right,
all through it was through this hall. I was made the second president of the hall, and we had picture shows, dances, and funerals, weddings, everything in this hall.
Right.
And it was really the nucleus of getting Belmont going.
Right. You want me to turn this off for a second?
Oh, it's okay, Julian. Hi, Joe. You know, I was going to shut the washing machine off. I thought, that thing's running too long. And I come home, and here I see somebody else's washing.
Now, would you mind drawing a rough sketch of the, or a really good sketch of the town site around that time?
Boy, I wished I could. There's two trails run on an angle through from Valemont to where the old boat landing was at McLennan.
Right.
And all
now, which way is McLennan?
The McLennan is gone this way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this trail was also called the Golden T. John Trail on old maps. And I can show you three houses in town that was our main artery to town.
Right.
The house was built on that angle.
Right.
And myself and two or three other fellows in town said, let's get this town laid out. People are building in the jack pines, any old angle.
Right.
Cutting a trail through the pine to their house.
Right.
So we contacted, and I forget his name now, I wish I could remember it, the head of the Department of Highways in Prince George, and said, we would like to lay out the town in a little village
for right.
Orderly matter. He said, I'll come down to see you. So he came down here, and he gave us an idea that we should lay it out east-northwest. What was
right.
that? What was already laid out about the railway track, leave it as it was on an angle.
Right.
So we, three of us, we sat down and sort of decided about where it would meet on the east-northwest according to property lines then.
Right.
And so it was. So therefore we got 5th Avenue, 4th Avenue, and we named all the streets, Ash, Birch, Cedar,
right.
through to that part. And that was, I had the only bulldozer in town. The same outlet after it was surveyed and laid out, jumped on the dozer and started pushing jack pines down the big streets.
I don't know, what year was this around?
I wouldn't be so sure. That would be in about, maybe 51, 52. 1951, 52, I think.
Now,
I could be out a year there.
You said there was a hotel and
a little hotel.
Right.
And it's all in the history books here.
Okay.
Pictures of it and the like.
Yeah.
And it was run by Alec and Dora Kushner.
Right.
They're both gone now. I'm related to them now because my eldest son married their, well, it's not their daughter, it's their daughter's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And they're in Prince George.
Right, yeah. Now, was there a church in town eventually?
And, no, the church, well, the first church was held in the community hall. No, in the school.
Right.
And then a little bit in the community hall. And then they built a church, and the first one being built, I'm not sure, Anglican. It's called the Baptist now.
Right.
There. And the next one would be built would be the Catholic. And I think the next one built was the United, which is now combined with the Anglican.
Right.
And then there's the lighthouse, another one that's been built since.
Right.
But when we first came, there was the schoolhouse, which was just the church.
Now, get the schoolhouse, what grades did the...
Oh, they taught, I think, from grades sometimes 1 to 8, sometimes 1 to 7.
Right.
Sometimes they went out.
Right.
One teacher. And the year I came, they were worried about keeping the teacher account. There were not enough pupils.
Right.
Well, it just mushroomed right away that it was almost more than one teacher could teach.
Right.
And the early teachers, quit teaching and cooking for me. Warren McCurdy, she's still going.
Uh-huh.
And it was a while before the we built the school where it is, Presley School.
Right.
And then they had it from 1 to 8.
Right.
And then only a year or two, they started to teach from 1 to 12. And then they expanded from 2 teachers to 4.
Oh, okay.
But now I think there must be a dozen teachers now.
So what year did it become a high school?
Around? It came a high school in a, after 1956, because I moved out of Belmont for a little while to Kelowna, so my two elder children could get high schooling.
Oh, I see.
And while they were down there, this kept expanding till we were teaching grade 12. And I said, hey, hey, come on back here. So I was working here all the time.
Right, yeah.
In the mills. So I got them to move back. And I had a log house built on what's Fifth Avenue. It's long gone.
Right.
My second son was born in the house. We couldn't get a doctor in or couldn't get out to hospital at the time. No ropes.
No kidding.
So Donnie, that's Donnie, is over the big white house.
Oh, okay.
Over there, we see.
Right.
It's Don Beeson Logging. Now he's taken over.
Oh, I see. For you, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when did things like electricity and running water and telephone and...
Well, when we first came here, there was one light plant, a Delco light plant, that was owned by one sawmiller, Bill Atkins, and his manager, Harry Partridge.
Right.
And I put in a light plant about a year later, a Delco.
Right.
Sent to Saskatchewan and got it from where the hydro was going into the prairies, and we were buying them cheap. They were battery plants, 32 volt.
Okay.
And that was the second one. And finally, I spearheaded a thing trying to get a hydro brought in.
Right.
There was 32 light plants by the time.
Oh, no
kidding.
I was
asking for power.
Wow.
Well, the first ones we finally did get to come in was the Power Commission, the BC Power Commission.
Right.
No, that wasn't the first. We tried to get them in, and they couldn't come in.
Right.
Because it wasn't feasible then.
Right.
So there was a light plant in McBride that furnished power for the railway for years.
Right.
And his contract ran out, and he had no work.
Right.
It's Mr. Fleming. It was an old-style plant.
Right.
But we got him to move to Belmont, and through donations, we put up poles and went to the Coal Branch land in Alberta.
Right.
Transformers from wire.
Wow.
And we got him set up, and he started furnishing power.
What year was this around? Or roughly?
Early 50s.
Early 50s?
Mid 50s. Earlier mid 50s.
Now, as far as things like the telephone and plumbing and...
Well, Mr. Fleming, finally, he was getting quite aged running this. This is his last chance. Then in come Northern Utilities from Alberta and bought him out.
Right.
And they expanded it and put in a little more modern diesel plant.
Right.
And then Hydro got, then it was the Power Commission went into Hydro. No Power Commission. They took over from Northern Utilities, had to buy him out.
Right.
And then BC Hydro come to me, and they took over, and they put in a very large diesel electric plants.
Right.
With these big plants, rail car plants.
Right.
And because they needed the electricity to run the sawmill, but they're very expensive.
Now, what sawmill was this one?
This is the Canyon Creek sawmill.
The Canyon Creek, right, okay, yeah.
And the power was not economical at all. It was subsidized quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
It was very expensive for produced by these rail cars.
Right.
And then we had the High Line come through. When the High Line come through, that was a godsend. And,
so when did the High Line come through?
Oh, golly. We've had it quite a while. High Line came through, I think, in the early 60s.
Early 60s.
I think the High Line came through to McBride. Yeah.
Now, as far as things like nurses and doctors for health services.
Oh, boy, that was something. We finally were trying to get doctors in here, and we had...
When you first came, was there any?
No.
Okay.
The first doctor was one in McBride.
Right.
When the road was open, you could get to
it. Oh, when did the road open?
Well, the road was a passable.
Right.
There was a road, but it wasn't always...
Great.
It was never snowplowed very often, and there was some mud holes in the spring and things like that.
So either dry or frozen?
Most of the time, we'd go to Jasper because we'd catch the rail.
Right.
we used to have to flag the train down in the early years.
Right.
There was no agent. We stood out on the track with a lantern and give two swings, and we heard two toots, and we knew that
the
train would stop for us.
Really?
We'd get on and see the dock in Jasper.
Right.
And finally, there was a doctor would come maybe twice a week to a room in the hotel.
Right.
And then we rented a building, the pipeline house, where the pipeline went through. We rented one of their houses to have a doctor.
Right.
And you'd go to too early in the morning, the water pail was froze, and he had to run to the creek to get water. And
right.
That wasn't very satisfactory.
Now,
so,
when was this around?
That was in the 70s.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And then I got quite involved with the health business. I was on the hospital board. I was chairman of the board for years when we built the new hospital in McBride.
Right.
I was on the board when it was the old Red Cross Hospital.
Right.
Well, there was a fund. The hospital had a fund that they were investing at 3%. And one night when I was having a meeting there, he says, what shall we do with this fund? It's only bringing us in 3%.
Right.
Well, I says, I would like to somebody make a motion that you would lend this money to the village of Elmont.
Right.
$10,000, so we could build a clinic. Well, Victoria's told you you can't have a clinic.
Right.
But I says, if we had the money, we'd build a clinic and we could run it ourselves.
Right.
When the evening was finished, somebody made the motion.
Yeah.
They all passed it.
Yeah.
When I came back from ride to Belmont, I had a check in my pocket made out to me to build a clinic
right.
for $10,000.
Wow.
Payable in 4 payments at $2,500 a year for
right.
the village.
Wow. You had a lot to do with building Belmont.
Yeah. So the next morning I walked in to the old log building you see it in town, the earliest log building. It was
right.
the bank then. And I bank manager named Bob Smith, he was just crying his eyes out why we didn't have a doctor and clinic.
Right.
So I walked into the bank with this check and I says, how would you like to be on the new health board of Belmont?
Right.
He says, what are you talking about? Well, we're going to build a clinic. Clinic. How are you going to build a clinic? So I laid this check down, made me deposit that to the new health board in Belmont. In
no
walks
kidding.
Women and Mrs. Clarence Johnson, they owned a sawmill here.
Right.
And she's a good bookkeeper.
Right.
I said, would you like to be our secondary treasurer? We just made it up, the three of us.
Yeah.
And before the week was out, I took my bulldozer, I dug a basement.
Yeah.
I was on the council at the time. We got this piece of land from a fellow who wanted to sell it bad.
Right.
We got our local, was a building inspector, but he helped us lay out a little plan.
Right.
And between myself and two other sawmillers, we donated most of the lumber. We built mostly lumber.
Right.
And we had it up and running in not much over about 6 weeks.
Wow.
And out of the $10,000, we had $178 left over. This was buying all the equipment to run a clinic.
Yeah.
A bedroom for the doctor, 2 bedrooms.
Yeah.
Stove, fridge, the works.
No kidding.
And we got a doctor to play. Then finally the doctor from McBride, we'd drive over
right.
twice a week. And then we got a doctor to stay in it.
Wow.
And that was a little building.
Right.
Well, since then we've built a new big
right.
clinic now.
What year did you build the original clinic?
Oh, it had to be before 78. It had to be in the early 70s.
Wow.
Yeah. Then we were informed from Victoria, found out how we were financing this through the McBride Hospital.
Right.
We really got our necks into it. We told you, you can't have a clinic.
Right.
And we said, sent a letter back, we have one and we're doing fine if we have to finance this. Because we had to buy medical supplies through the hospital.
Yeah.
Over, and the bookkeeper wasn't quite to their way of doing it.
Right.
But we had a clinic and we found good doctors there.
Great. That's, and still to this day?
No, it's sold as a private home now, and we have the big, quite a big clinic now.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, in McBride, Belmont.
We have a doctor here now. We have hard times keeping doctors here.
So it sounds like I don't know why, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, but it's all through the way it's financed.
Right.
We are told we're to have two doctors for the year, so.
Oh.
We have a fellow now, he's a little Russian fellow, he's a very nice fellow.
Right.
He escaped out of Russia and came to Canada and went through as a doctor.
Wow, no kidding.
He's doing all right, you know.
Yeah.
He's fresh, so.
Now, I guess for the earlier part of the year, and right up till now, where did most people work who lived in Tampa?
Well, it's mostly, when I first came here, there was up to 12, 13 sawmills. We all had little portable sawmills.
Right.
And we logged various valleys.
Right.
And we logged down the canoe until it was, the Canoe River was flooded when the Mica Dam was in it.
Right.
And therefore, we quit sawmilling and brought logs into the one big mill.
Right, which was Canyon Creek.
Yeah, Canyon Creek at the time.
Right.
So that was a changeover in the way we did it. Out of a lot of little mills, it became one big mill, and all of us sawmillers had to turn to be loggers then.
Now, what year did Canyon Creek start up? Remember?
Oh, they started 2 years after I came back in 49, 50. 51.
Okay.
Yeah, that's when the Canyon Creek started.
Now, and then you said everyone became loggers.
Well, all little sawmillers, and except one or two, and they barely survived, and they've since quit.
You know? Right, right.
Just went logging.
Right.
There's quite a few of us now. I'm out of it. My son is old. But we log, and now the logging has changed from the early way we did it, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of high leaf. My son runs a high leaf now. And,
right. Now, so when it switched over to Canyon Creek, has that been the only mill pretty much throughout the years then, or has there been another big mill in the area?
Yes, there was Heisted Brothers.
Okay.
And then there was, they set a mill up, and they had a big planing mill in a subdivision that's right in town.
Right.
And there was quite a bit of complaints about the big mill in town and the big burner.
Right.
And the ash, women went to wash on Monday mornings and all their clothes would be covered with ash.
Yeah, yeah.
So they finally moved.
Right.
Out, and then there was the Clarence Johnson was a fairly big mill. In fact, myself and this Ralph Levins, I've got the shirt on today, it's a sign of it, we formed a working partnership, the Beeson and Levins Sawmill Company.
Oh, okay.
And we run that for years.
Oh, so
and
you had a saw?
Yeah, I had that. Until we sold out to...
Beeson and what was the other company?
Beeson and Levins.
Levins?
Yeah.
Now, what years were these?
They were from 51, 52, I ran up to 56.
And it was Levins?
Levins.
Levins.
Here it is here. The Beeson and Levins Sawmill, Canoe River, B.C.
Hey, look at that. Right on.
This is a famous artist now, Van Slick. You've heard of him. He's got a year's tour of all his sketches are going all over B.C. And the Prince George Museum is...
And you're right on the Canoe River. You were on the Canoe River.
Yeah, we were the first mill to go on the upper side of the tracks on the canoe, Ralph and I.
That's great. That's an awesome thing. That's it. Yep. Here's something to
do. We run a good camp. In fact, people come to work, they'd almost like to get on our crew.
Really? How many people work for your mill?
Well, I'd have hardly never over 12.
Right.
We logged and sawed and planed. We'd log in the winter time, and when it comes summer, I didn't saw.
Right.
Then I was on the planer. Then I planed for this company, and then the deal was every 10th carload, I was allowed to plane my power lumber.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I did very well in those years with it.
Now, you said some of the mills had bunkhouses, and this was for the single men, and did they have homes for the families who worked
well? I run a camp in 1963,
right.
62-63, down the Canoe Valley before it was flooded.
Right.
And I could log up to the 2,500 foot level.
Right.
And I had a sawmill there.
Oh, Oh, yeah, the mill there, too?
And that was the R.A. Beeson Sawmill Company then.
Oh.
I was another...
R.A.?
R.A. Beeson Sawmill.
And that was from what years?
That was 1963, 62 and 63. And then I moved the mill to Cedarside.
Right.
And there's where the mill was, the other side of that red buildings.
Oh, okay. The building's right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now the little building on with a little window in.
Yeah.
That's 10 foot wide.
Right.
And 16 foot long. That's what my wife and I and my son and daughter lived into till we built our, when it was in Belmont, till we
right.
built our log house.
No kidding.
That was what we lived in.
Wow.
And I built that down in where it was George Hicks Park, and I towed it with an old car I had
right.
from place to place till I built the log house.
All right. Jeez. Oh, now, how long did this mill go for, R.E. Beeson?
It went until, I forget now, what year I shut it down here. I finally subdivided this quarter section.
Right.
And it's Beeson Subdivision, it's called, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the early years, when the government found out I was laying out streets and avenues and not quite according to regulations.
Right.
It was called Beeson Shacktown. That was the name of it. Till I got on the regional district as a director.
Right.
And then I had to start to abide by the rules and laws, and we had to have certified surveyors come in and survey it and stuff. And
right.
As you come in here, I laid out all those streets and that.
Oh, you did?
And stuff. And all the buildings as you come in off the road.
So Cypress and the other
all that.
Streets?
Yeah, I laid all that out. But it worked out good. I had surveyors had to come and survey each of the lots.
Right.
But what I did survey, they checked my pins, just wooden pins.
Right.
And I was very little bit out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the only thing is I had to take two lots to make one because I had my lots too small.
Right.
And kept making the lots bigger. So I got big lots here now, like all these are all 2 hectares.
Right.
And that's 10 acres that one there. Old place was.
Right, right. Huh. Now, you said that some of the mills, the Canyon Creek, did they have bunkhouses?
In the early years, we had bunkhouses.
You did?
Like, later when Ralph Levins bought my share out of the Beeson and Levins, he'd become
right.
R.M. Levins Sawmill.
Right.
And I was R.E. Beeson Sawmill.
Right.
And we run camps down the valley.
Right.
And we had bunkhouses and big cookhouse. And
kidding.
So oh, yeah.
What were the bunkhouses like to live in? Were they?
Oh, they were, in later years, I can even show you today some of the last bunkhouses.
Oh, they're still around?
Oh, yeah, there's some down just the valley a little ways. Ralph Levins, he's in Vancouver now, he has old timers.
Right.
But the old building's been, the farm has been sold where they're sitting on.
Right.
But they were all built, nearly all were built 10 by 20, I think it was, and all portable. We had big ones in the early years that
right.
weren't portable. Then
right.
we started building them portable because we moved them as we moved the sawmill to new limits.
Right. Yeah. And the guys would just rent them?
No. Just when a guy worked, he paid so much, no rent for the to me and the bunkhouses.
Right.
They were all double bunks.
Right.
And put in, and finally we, as the years went on, we began to put fewer men in each bunkhouse.
Right.
They were kind of crowded at first,
yeah.
but always a big cookhouse. And the men only paid by their meals. I think we charged $2.75 a day for meals.
Oh, no kidding, man.
Yeah.
Geez, that's a deal.
Well fed.
Yeah.
I had some very high-class cooks. I had one German cook that he used to cook for the Waldorf Astoria in New York, and he cooked. Come from Colonial Company cooked one year. Oh,
wow.
The meals that man put up.
No kidding.
We had tourists wanted to see the valley before it was flooded.
Right.
From all over Europe were coming. And they'd end up at my cook house. Well, I was feeding more tourists than I was. He was a wonderful cook.
Now, was at the time, or throughout the years, is there ever, what have the labor relations been like between?
Right.
What have the labor relations been like, say, between Canyon Creek? Was there ever strikes or walkouts or things like that?
Very minor. Strikes were very minor. And I happened to run sawmills and stuff, non-union,
right,
myself. And I didn't have much trouble because I kept my wages usually just slightly above theirs.
Right.
And my conditions were pretty good. Finally, when I did shut down, I was having complaints from union guys. They were coming in to unionize, and I had a little sawmill sitting here, portable.
Right.
And they said I was supposed to put in toilets and this and that and whatnot, and I had outdoor biffies. And so about that time, I decided enough sawmill, and I shut her down.
Right. Oh, jeez. And what year did you shut it down, you remember?
I'd have looked through some of my old timesheets and stuff in there.
Right. 70s.
Anyhow,
yeah.
Then I got called back the odd time to work for the company when they become union.
Right. The Canyon Creek, or?
That was still the last Canyon Creek.
Right.
I had a trade that was, they called me saw doctor.
Right.
Welding and fixing bandsaws, running bandsaws and stuff.
All right.
So once in a while, it's a job not now too many do.
Right.
And once in a while they wouldn't have trouble. And I'd be called back and I had to work a little bit fixing their saws and stuff. But I couldn't stand it. It was being highly unionized. And I found the men would laugh about how the saw would run into a piece of steel and the sparks would fly and all this, you know.
Right.
They didn't seem to have their heart in the job. It was just,
yeah,
you know. And
so you did
it got my nerves. I had to leave it.
Right, yeah.
I just kind of walked.
Yeah, I'd not.
My heart goes into my job, and I work many hours to get a bandsaw up, and you just get it so it's perfect.
Right.
And then you see a young fella come out on a night shift, and it runs into a piece of steel and completely damages the saw, and then
right,
laughs about it.
Jeez.
You know.
I understand that, yeah.
So I don't think the union's done a lot for the country and for the men and stuff here, but people do not have their heart in their jobs. The very few,
right,
are dedicated, except some of the ones that's saw hammers, saw tensioners, guys who look after the saws and things like that.
Right.
They're old timers. Their heart's in the job. But most of them now, it's a matter of if I can get my 8 hours in and get home and somebody can't see me during the time up.
That's
what
it. Yeah.
You know, the spirit is not there like it used to be, but
right,
we run a contract.
Now, what do you think? Why do you think that changed?
I don't know. I think maybe the union is educating the workers a little more, but it seems like they have to keep good high wages and working conditions and stuff.
Right.
But it's to have a person proud of his job or something. You know,
yeah.
I think a little more training into each person's job, and that he's proud that this is my trade, this is my job.
Right.
I'm proud of that. I'm proud of my production.
Yeah.
And this and that. That spirit is
going away. Yeah, gone.
Because I went into a school of graduation once, and I was asking for school to go in there and help them with their graduating class. And I said, oh, what are you going to do when you get out, one lad? Oh, he says, I'm going to go to the sawmill. And then I said, the other one, you going to? No, I'm going to go to the truck drivers. The other guy says, no, I'm going to that. And I says, why all the different choices? Well, he said, their union pays more than the other union pays.
Oh, geez.
He said, whatever union pays the top price, that's what I want to go into.
Right, yeah.
So the idea of
doing what you like,
the profession of the job was, that wasn't right in their heart at all.
Right.
That's when the union come in, and of course their parent talk was, you know, what they were getting.
Right.
So they were losing that old idea of
just be doing what you like to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the most pleasant aspects of living in Belmont?
Oh, I think some of my biggest things was. Well, a little bit when we got the town laid out in the streets and avenues, that was one thing.
Right.
And I think what the second thing is when we got got that clinic going. Yeah. I felt kind of proud of myself when that happened.
Well, you should, yeah.
And then in 1978, I worked an awful lot getting the first senior citizens home here, the Golden Years Lodge. And I worked on that, and I think they appreciated it quite a little bit, because after that big event, I finally got that one.
Right. And, wow, citizen, right now I'm holding up a plaque that Mr. Beeson was awarded for building the first senior citizens home.